Hello and welcome to Brussels Unplugged. I am Pietro Moro.
And I'm Matteo Albania. And together we bring a commentary on Brussels as you have never heard.
Once a month, on the 25th, we dig deep into what's happening in town with no strings attached. Just two chaps discussing their Brussels experience.
And so rendezvous on the 25th of each month. On y va!
Let's go! Hello and welcome back to Brussels Unplugged. Matteo, it's good to see you again. You've been away for a bit from Brussels.
Yeah, I've been in Italy actually. I've been both to my homeland in Sicily and then to Sardinia. Got the chance to witness and experience the European elections, how they were lived, how they were experienced and campaigned by the main Italian parties. It was fun and intense.
I can imagine. Here in Brussels as well, I haven't left, I've been here the whole time. And it's been quite a doozy. We even had the farmers come back to protest. But luckily, this time I wasn't woken up at 4:30 in the morning, so it seems like they had a slighter presence, to no surprise, since they've been getting some achievements with von der Leyen backtracking a bit on the Green Deal and a lot of major political parties shifting from the prior election, their political stance. Maybe this is a good...
I want just to ask you there, do you think that indeed these farmer protests was less participated because they already achieved something with the previous protests?
I think so. I would not know how else to explain it and what rationale to give the lower numbers, the lower casino, the lower noise. Well, the last two times before this one that they came to town, we all knew, no matter where you were living in Brussels, whether you're in Schaarbeek towards Forêt or in the city centre, you heard them. You heard the loud klaxons at 4:30 in the morning and with all the little tunes and musics, the beers cracking, and then at certain points, you know, they're also burning a lot of stuff. There weren't any vandalizations this time around.
So you managed to sleep quite well this time?
Yeah. I woke up at 7, and I realized only later during the day when I read the papers that they were actually in town. So I didn't know it from just living here.
So you didn't have fun from the farmers' protests. You didn't have time to listen to some of their tunes and music, but you've been to some parties, some interesting parties recently.
Yes. Just recently I went to the Merode summer party, which was an incredible event in this little villa in the city. It's a private members' club, but that night it was also open to guests. A lot of music, a lot of food from around the world, a lot of performance arts, and great event. Met interesting people that do a myriad of different things, from who follows Cannes to who tries to promote democratic elections in Africa. So it was very, very, very stimulating and enticing.
And that's what, for many people, Brussels is all about, no? The networking.
Oh, yeah.
The idea that even in clubs like the Merode, you can get out of the bubble while still being in the bubble, right?
Absolutely. That's a great part of Brussels, you know, especially once I love the bubble, for all of our bubble listeners out there, but it's also nice to get out of it, you know, to talk about something that I'm not a Cannes film expert at all, but hearing somebody who is in their perspective on it was definitely very, very enriching. And other aspects such as that, from people that are doing scaling up from startups and other people that are working in parliament, and a few we know.
Talking about parliament, our biggest topic, probably the biggest topics probably during these weeks and it will be also beyond this this week's next month is the result of the European elections.
Yes.
And what's gonna come next,
Matteo? Yeah, no, absolutely. You've been everywhere. You've been on Sky News, Euro News. Where didn't you go? Where were you talking about the elections?
I haven't been yet. I'm actually here now at Brussels Unplugged. So
exactly.
I reserve the best for our podcast.
Lovely. So tell us a bit. Give us a bit of a rundown, because we're well versed with what happened in Italy, but let's maybe start with the European level. Then let's talk a bit about Italy, and then the impacts that it's had on national governments. There's been resignations left and right, some that may still come. So the wave may not be done yet. We're definitely in the aftermath, in the livelihood of the aftermath of the election, where everybody is starting to position and just around for top jobs, and also people are looking for new jobs as well.
Indeed. A couple of points I would like to underline that I have seen missing from the debate around elections. I have been only in the recent days. I've been to several events unpacking the EU elections, analyzing the EU elections, and the main takeaways are that the center coalition held, that there was not a far right surge, that pro-European parties were voted by the majority of European citizens. Sorry, I beg to differ. I beg your pardon, but I beg to differ. For my takeaways are actually a bit different. First, yes, people voted, but this was only 50%. The turnout at European level was
very low.
Was very low. Actually, compared to 2019, it only increased by 0.5 points. And no one is mentioning this, that in the last months, not only the European Parliament, but also European political parties have heavily invested in communication campaigns to push people to go to vote, to get out to vote. Not only that, in some other countries, the minimum age to vote has been lowered to 16 and 17 years old. So the amount of voters eligible to vote were even more. And despite all these efforts and even the campaign of the European Parliament involved illuminating and lighting national monuments with the colors of the flag, and we have seen and we
Absolutely.
Have heard everywhere how it was important to get out to vote. Despite all these efforts, still, these were not very well felt elections.
Well, yes, but look, little fun fact, not that fun to me, it actually really pissed me off. I wasn't able to vote. Although I did all the steps as required for Italians living abroad, I mean, in the AIRE, which is the registry of Italians living abroad, since 3 months already now, but for 3 months, my commune in Italy didn't send the nulla osta, the okay paper. Nulla osta, nice words for just it's okay for somebody to do this. And this is me voting here and not going to my commune in Italy. Although the state is fully aware that I've been living abroad and I'm fully in compliance with the rules. But they didn't send that. And I found that out on Saturday when I went to vote. And they told me, look, yeah, you'll have, if the new law that comes within an hour and 15 minutes, then you'll be able to vote. I was like, I know people that work in the commune in Genoa and Milan, and they're all great people. But I also know that one of the nice things of working for a commune is that you're not working on a Saturday afternoon.
So. No, indeed. Thanks for sharing this
absolutely.
Very personal experience, because it is indeed something that I've heard from other people in Brussels. Myself, while I've been...
You voted in Italy?
I voted here.
Ah, you voted
Brussels.
Here. Okay.
I was back from my holidays and I voted here in Brussels because I'm officially registered in Belgium.
So you had to come back.
So I'm registered to the AIRE, the official Italian registry for people, for Italians living abroad. But I still had to queue 2 hours and a half to vote.
Right. Under the rain?
Luckily, it was raining, but luckily...
Spring hasn't started here yet, in Brussels.
It hasn't, but I was voting, actually, the place where we voted was under some sort of roof outside, so it was... We queued mostly avoiding the rain. But One point indeed is a turnout, and probably what you have mentioned, your personal experience has played a role. But the other point is that people still, as you did, you had to register to vote for Italian candidates. So even this idea that there are European elections, it's just an image, just a way of saying it, because we voted, all of us, also other people, also the experts voted for their own national countries. And the second takeaway is coming back to the analysis of the European election result is this denial that there was a far-right surge. That was not so big, even in some events have been like in the last few days, the main European political parties have been saying, yes, we avoided the surge of the far-right. I'm sorry, I disagree. I mean, the three biggest European countries, Germany, France, and Italy, have seen a huge rise of the far right.
Absolutely.
Front National in France, AfD in Germany, and Meloni's party, we still consider far right, was the winner in the elections. So this is not just to over exaggerate the fear of the far right, but what I see missing from the debate is the analysis of saying why did people vote for far-right parties. There is really this idea of going business as usual, like nothing happened, okay, the center held, so let's go ahead and let's keep going on as nothing has happened. But I think that it would be a big mistake and it would be a failed step if the EPP, the Socialists, the Liberals, the Greens, the establishment parties will not reflect on why they losing ground on national context.
That is true. However, though, I have to think a bit about before the European elections, there were elections in the Netherlands, and we saw Geert Wilders. Geert Wilders really, really went out, but he was not able to become prime minister. And right now they nominated the former head of the Secret Service, intelligence services, a technocrat. So somebody that is not politically affiliated, that would put everybody on the same page and happy together. And in the coalition negotiations as well, we saw Geert Wilders really, really backtracking on a few key hard items. And we've also seen that with Giorgia Meloni, who, when she was at the opposition, she was strongly no euro, no Europe, and we all know the slogans. However, though, once she went into government, that had to change. So this is my question then, right? Yes, we have to think of the why, and I think the why is going to come out with the years as well, to see how, of course, this was a vote of self-confidence in the Meloni government and in her party and in herself as a leader as well. However, over the years, she's been really good in the last few years to navigate that thin line between what she promised when she was at the opposition and then campaigning and then what she's doing once in office. Now, my question is, are we going to see that as well in France, where the European elections are typically seen as a vote of protest, so not as, let's say, that serious. So there's a difference with a national election there. And a few of the other member states that you just mentioned.
I think we're going to see it. I mean, you mentioned moderate Meloni that we have seen since she's been in government. If we look at France, where there will be, by the way, legislative and parliamentary elections
in July,
end of June, beginning of July, in two rounds. Even Marine Le Pen, I mean, the Rassemblement National once used to be the Front National, used to campaign for the exit of France. This is now a topic.
That's not a topic anymore.
Completely out of the table. Yeah. They even have been overtaken on the right by Eric Zemmour Reconquête Party. So there is always a thing, the idea that when you get to power and get Wilders is also another example, you come to a reality check. Even far-right parties, they come to a reality check. They come to the reality check that to govern, you need compromise. You need to soften your stances.
Yes.
And then you will eventually always find someone farther to your right that will still be stronger, that will still push for harder teams, for harder topics. Mm. So
I guess that ties as well to what you were just saying, right? The why. that the why persists, right? Even once the parties then win the elections, still maintain some of the original stances, but then start, let's say, mutating or evolving, so to rise to the expectations of leadership, and to have coherent policy and not just brash politics.
The why comes down, I think, also to what in 1992. In the U.S., when Bill Clinton was elected, they say, "How did you win the election?" It's the economy, stupid. No, yeah. At the end, it's always about whether it's perception or reality. Most of the time, reality, but whether economy works for people.
Exactly. That you really touched on the point, because one of the most let's say surprising data points, at least that at first a prima facie, so on the surface when I looked at it, was that the youth, young voters, especially in these member states we just mentioned, especially France, they overwhelmingly picked the far right, which is not that usual for young voters, right? Like stereotypically, a young voter is more liberal, more, let's say, of course, a bit anti-establishment, but definitely a lot more liberal, more on the left side, let's say, in the center.
And that's also the idea that a certain generation and a certain...
Sorry, Matteo, but the one main factor for them was the economy.
Yeah.
Precisely what you just said, right? That was their main fear of what there's going to be in the future. There's all of these reports coming out that our generation already is never going to retire.
No, definitely. That's exactly what I feel happened. And let's not forget, Rassemblement National in France, smartly enough, put a new face, Jordan Bardella,
yes, 28.
20 years old, the king of TikTok, as as their leading face. No, it was not much Marine Le Pen campaigning. It was really Jordan Bardella campaigning. And people resonate when they... can see someone they
that's young
align,
as well.
Is young, aligns with their views, and it's new. It's a new face, because Marine Le Pen has been in national politics for decades, but still she understood that for this election much more was at stake, and she needed to put up front a new face, a new candidate. Geert Wilders has also been in politics for long, but he has been never in power. People, when they are unhappy about their economic situation, they say, well, let's try someone new who never been in power. Yeah. The same happened 2 years ago when Meloni won the elections.
Yeah.
She was never been in power. So people say, okay, let's give a fair share to someone who has never been in power. Yeah. If I go back again to Italy, to the situation in Italy, even Five Star Movement was the same protest-driven vote to try someone new. The establishment parties, the more moderate parties, they should come to a reflection, in my opinion, where they analyze why they're losing the ground, why they're losing the touch with the new generations that suffer from high inflation, from uncertainty about the future, from uncertainty about their job security. And they are completely not communicating, not able to communicate with establishment parties. It seems that they speak a language from another world.
You just brought me back a memory when I was working for a party in Italy at the last European election, that I could not understand what they were saying. Really, really, just the language used. I went to school. I work, I write, I read, and I work in a typically, you know, white-collar, high-educated job. And still, I could understand these people. So now, how are they going to go out and campaign and actually make a connection with the people, the everyday people? You can't.
Indeed, you can't. Let's say that we could talk about European elections for probably a couple of hours, but that's not the point of this podcast. The point of this podcast is to talk about Brussels and to unplug it from the bubble.
But last question, Matteo, before we wrap up the election poll. Will von der Leyen make it?
I think she will, and she will just because there are no other options.
No other options. I agree with you at this part, but also the last time she was sort of pulled out from a rabbit hat. She was not the official candidate of the parties. She was not a Spitze Kandidatin. EUCO just tossed her in the mix.
It is true, but this time around the elections in France are a very big hurdle on the road for any other candidate to be proposed, mostly by Macron. But again, there a surprise can come, and it depends a lot on how Giorgia Meloni will play her cards and what kind of strategy she will decide to pursue for the next cycle. now, until now, would say that when we're going to release this podcast, it's going to be a few days before the UCO, but we recorded before that, way before that. So as of now, as of today, I can say that my pick will be, yes, Wonderland.
Okay, today is the 13th of June. So you UCO is in 2 weeks, 14 days.
So don't blame me
all right.
on my predictions on the 13th of June.
Absolutely not. Well, Matteo, we're reaching the end of our time, and we're still waiting. 13th of June, and we're still waiting for summer. It was 7 degrees. I turned on the heater at night because it was just too cold, and I do not want to be cold in June.
I got a blanket. I didn't turn on the heating. But since we are wrapping up, while you are, of course, you are cold at home, I can give you a very good TV series recommendation if you don't want to be outside drinking in the cold and you want to be just chilling, which I just watched. It's a TV series starring the Benedict Cumberbatch.
Ooh,
and it's called Eric.
Eric.
I will not spoil about what it is, but it's about a missing child.
Okay. Intense.
And a father and the family looking for him.
Okay, very intense. Well, what I can leave you instead, you left a series, I'll leave you a book, Clara and the Sun, which is essentially is a book about AI coming to consciousness. So in coming to consciousness, but in the sense of coming into contact with the world, and in that sense becoming conscious at one's place.
Is it a novel or?
It's a novel, yes.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Highly recommend it.
So if the next days are going to be gloomy, dark, rainy, you got a TV series and a book.
Absolutely. And with this, we thank you for listening to us, dear listeners.
We can also briefly announce that the Brussels Unplugged podcast has great plans for the future. We're going to expand our hosting, and we're going to probably include
a few guest speakers.
Yes, we're not going to reveal the name
yet. Not yet.
But are in the pipeline.
Stay tuned.
Thank you all.
Thank you all, and have a great day.